Welcome to Caldwell University Conversations. I'm Colette Liddy. The summer of 2020 has certainly been a challenging one. A worldwide pandemic, racism, economic challenges, and job losses. In the face of difficulties, it takes courage to hold on to hope and faith. What does it mean to be a woman of faith and a Black Catholic woman of faith today? And to encourage young people to keep fighting the good fight. My guests today know about that as they strive to be faithful and accompany students on their journeys to pursuing truth and contributing to a just society, which are both part of the mission of Caldwell University. I'm delighted to welcome Andrée St. Felice, Director of the Educational Opportunity Fund at Caldwell University. She holds two master's degrees in pastoral ministry and business contemporary management, and she is in the doctoral program in educational leadership at Caldwell. She is very engaged in her church and parish activities. I'm also happy to welcome Dr. Valerie Lewis Mosley, an adjunct faculty member in the Department of Theology and Philosophy at Caldwell. She was an obstetrics nurse for many years. She also holds two master's degrees, health law and theology, and a doctorate of ministry, and she has served as a director of religious education, a youth minister, a spiritual director, and much more. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Colette, for the invitation, and good morning.
Thank you, Colette, for the invitation. Good morning to you, Colette. Good morning, Valerie.
Good morning, my sister, Andrea.
So I'm so delighted to be with both of you. Let's talk about how you've held on to hope and faith in the midst of the challenges, this pandemic, the isolation, perhaps not seeing the ones you love, even our trusted colleagues, and then seeing the racism, all the challenges. What thoughts get you through each day? Dr. Lewis Mosley, can you begin for us?
Yes, well, I begin my day with about an hour of contemplative prayer. As you know, Colette, I'm also a lay associate for the Caldwell Dominicans. And so with that spirituality, contemplative prayer is a major component of our spiritual walk. So I in the past, used 30 minutes, but in the presence of our current experiences, I felt the need to advance that to an hour each day in order to center myself and more so to keep myself sort of inoculated against all of the daggers of the hatefulness and the evil that is taking place in our society today.
That's a wonderful commitment. That's really quite a model. Andrée, you're also a Dominican associate. And how is it that you've held on to your hope and faith during these months?
Yes, Colette, I am a Dominican associate. And when I wake up in the morning, the first thing I do, I put my knees on the floor and start praying, not only praying for myself, for what I need to get through to the day, pray for my family, my students, pray for the country as well to see, because we know God has his hands over us and will protect us. So I'm asking for his protection for myself and everybody else that I meet during the day and ask him to allow me to do the work that I'm doing according to his will.
Dr. Lewis Mosley, you wrote a very thought-provoking article for the National Catholic Reporter. It was titled, My Unbridled Tongue, Challenges and Inequities That Threaten Black Women's Lives. And I quote here, one of your paragraphs or one of your quotes here, my unbridled tongue challenges the inequities that threaten our lives and dismiss our right to voice our truth. It is the voice that even challenges Mother Church for not always being such an alma mater, good mother, to her Black Catholic parishioners and the Black community at large, end quote. So in the face of racism, what can you tell your church that you love so deeply that it needs to do or needs to be?
They need to live the gospel. They need to live their own pastoral documents They need to be who we are as a universal church. They need to stand on the witness of enculturation, which is what it means to be a Catholic. And more than anything else, they need to put their Catholic social thought into action. The letter of St. James says, faith without action is a dead faith. I would like to say that a church without action with its faith is a dead church.
Audrey, do you have any comments on that? On your church, I know you love your church, but where it needs to be today on this issue?
I would agree with Valerie, and I would add what Mother Teresa said, without prayer, no faith, without faith, no love, without love, no service, without service, no joy and peace. The church is preaching the gospel, which is joy and peace. We need to embody the faith in order to love our neighbors, love others, in order to serve them, so to bring joy to them and to ourselves.
You both obviously have the gift of faith. Give us a little bit of your backgrounds, where the seed of faith was planted for you, Dr. Lewis Mosley. Where did it begin?
My family is seven generations of Black Catholics. It really begins, in a sense, as faith from just a belief in relation to the Creator. It would begin from the beginning, generations upon generations ago, with my African ancestors from the African diaspora, from the shores of Africa to the shores of the United States during the transatlantic slave trade. It is only by faith that they have survived. In reference to my particularity of my family of origin, my Catholic witness would begin with my great-grandparents, Kari and Daniel Livingstone, who were also the cornerstones that were the Black Catholic community in Jersey City that built the first Black Catholic parish here in the state of New Jersey in the Archdiocese of Newark. Christ the King is a historical parish for the apostolate to the African American Catholics and to the Black community as a whole. A group of lay women in 1930 went to then Bishop Walsh and insisted that they be able to have a safe haven where they could go to Mass, not be turned away from communion, or not to be made to feel unwelcome. Bishop Walsh began an investigation as well and decided that a faith community that sought to fill the needs of those who were African American would be allowed to be built in Jersey City, not just for Black Catholics per se, because all were welcome, but particularly so that they could come to Mass and not feel as if they were excluded from the welcome table of the communion celebration. So that is where it begins, and it has continued through my grandfather, through to my mom and my dad, through to me and my two sisters, to my nieces and nephews, and to their children.
That's
so
wonderful.
That is where it begins.
That is wonderful history you just gave us too, some history of Black Catholics in New Jersey. And I've also heard you give a little bit of your story during Black History Month on campus, which was really wonderful. Now, Andrei, I know that you are from Haiti. So where were the seeds of your faith planted?
It started with my aunt, who was a faithful woman. And she would ask, bring us together and teach us how to pray. She will go on pilgrimage and teach us that a prayer wasn't done only in the house, but in nature also we could meet God. So I started developing my faith through her teaching. And she was a faithful servant, a principal in charge of teaching young people. And she was very involved in what she was doing. And she was faithful, and she followed with action by taking us to places, to different churches. So I carried that with me when I came to the United States, I was looking for a place where I can worship freely, and I found the Church of St. Peter Claver, who was founded by Blacks, and it has a great foundation of what it means to worship and be yourself and not have to worry and express yourself and worship as Black Catholics.
And that's a wonderful story of how your aunt modeled for you and how you carry her with you every day. Now, you both work with young people. Andre E., you just finished the summer session with your incoming students for the EOF program. I attended the closing session, and there was so much hope in that Zoom room, so much joy from the students, from your staff. The students shared their poems, their reflections, there were awards. And one of my thoughts was that perhaps young people, they're just not taking things for granted today because they've been inside for so many months, right? So what do you try to bring to the young people in the midst of their struggles?
I love these kids. They're talented, they're smart, they are very inquisitive. What I try to bring to them in this time of crisis is how much they are valued, is to teach them to know who they are. And we had several workshops on teaching them about who they are as a person. How to love themselves, how to love to serve others while loving what they do. We try to teach them to be grateful, to be humble, to be empathetic to their peers, their fellow students, their parents. We try to help them to be aware of the society that we are living in now. With a love for the self, I think, in my opinion, that they will be richly empower the world that they are living in. They will be able to love the career of their choice and express it in a loving way. And that's what our society is missing. Too much hatred. I think we have to start loving ourselves, express it, express the love to other people as well.
That is beautiful. Dr. Lewis Mosley, I've been in your class and I see how the students are engaged, how they're answering the questions, how you as a theology professor are bringing them the faith and hope, no matter what their backgrounds are, no matter what their faith background is, they're engaged in the gospel stories. So what is it that you try to bring to them in the midst of their struggles?
Truth. The unadulterated truth of the gospel. One of the things that I, having worked with youth and children for nearly three decades, have understood about young people, and even recalling my own days, even though they seem to be further and further away, those youthful days, is that the most disappointing aspect of being a young person is finding out that the truth has not been given to you. And the same goes with the gospel. Mm. In many ways, the church has so sanitized the actual gospel, the actual life, death, and resurrection and suffering of Jesus, that we have removed the actual tangible reality, that visceral experience of what this man of color went through in trying to be loving, unconditional love into the world. When the young people begin to see the anthropological and geopolitical circumstance of this Christic Christ, it makes sense to them. When they begin to be able to see that this man who lived in an occupied nation that was oppressed, overly taxed, humiliated and mistreated because of who they were, maybe even because of what they looked like, and even what they believed, they begin to be able to make that connection. Particularly for the young males of color, to be able to see that this man of African Asiatic descent, because that's a piece that we seem to miss in our discussion of this Christ who is both God and man. And if we truly believe that he was both God and man, the man component of him had a context of language, ethnicity, color, language, ways of being. And as these young African men, African-American men, Caribbean African men, Latino men, Asian men, men of every perspective, begin to see themselves sort of even physically modeled in some aspect of Christ, they can begin to now engage this understanding of suffering, oppression, even being able to make the connection of this Christ who was hung on the cross was not very much different from many of their ancestors that were lynched. And it's in seeing this reality of a Christ who died for all that they begin to see a part of themselves. And that is where the truth then begins to open up for them.
Well, you certainly gave us all a challenge. I think it's a wonderful challenge. The truth, I'm not sanitizing the truth. That is a wonderful challenge. And also I've seen, and we are running out of time here, but I've seen even in talking about also this whole coronavirus, right? And fear, so many people have fear, right? Fear is not a virtue as we know. And I read Dominican Father Timothy Radcliffe, who was the former Superior General of the Order of Preachers. He was writing a few months ago about the World Communications Day message, and he talked about the physical isolation gnawing at our humanity, and he pointed to the story of the Last Supper. He said it tells of a story that is born of Jesus's deepening isolation. Mm-hmm. And he offered this beautiful reassurance, and you might want to comment on this. He said, so one way to bear the isolation which is imposed on billions is as a sharing in the loneliness of Jesus, which he bore so that we might belong to each other in him. So I wondered if you had any comments on that and anything about how people are living in fear, right? And how we get over that fear. Dr. Lewis Mosley?
I have to acknowledge the feeling of fear. When this pandemic began to be realized back in February, and as it grew into this massive consumption of our time, our attention, and even our lives, I have to admit that there was a great deal of fear and trepidation for me, because I am of a certain age. I do have a pre-existing condition that placed me in such great peril. And so I had to spend, as I mentioned earlier, that additional time in contemplative prayer to remind myself of our trust in God, because fear and trust cannot occupy the same space. The scripture mm-hmm. tells us that. Mm-hmm. And so that isolation moment of having to be removed from others, I took it actually as a welcome time of retreat, of Jesus going off into a quiet place to pray, to eat, to sleep, to rest. Because often in much of the work that I do, I have to be focused a lot on self-care, to not to wear myself out. So I look at this as a time of self-care for myself, as a way of communing with people who were homesick, desperately threatened with COVID, and talking them through this to be able to survive the illness.
Andrei, we just have probably about a minute or so. Your comments on this.
I reminded myself that God didn't give me the spirit of fear. Amen. In spite of everything that is going on. Everything that we're not unsure of, and we do not know how to do. I was not afraid, but I was a little skeptical about the summer program. It's the first time we were running a virtual summer program. But by trusting in God and trusting in the staff, that we had an excellent summer program. So God didn't give us the spirit of fear. He gave us the spirit of courage to embark on anything that comes our way. So that's how I viewed the time of confinement. And I was able to be part of a prayer group that also helped other people get out of their fear. We had people that didn't want to come out, people that were afraid. By praying with us, they were able to go outside and breathe. And that's how I approach it. Definitely, fear is not from God. It's not of God.
It's interesting. I'd read an article where a Catholic priest was commenting, he's a psychologist, on how perhaps all of this isolation needed to be done for health at the beginning. But when you put people into fear, it's harder to, as a psychologist, he said, get them out of that. So, but we know, because being women of faith, myself striving, trying, falling down often, but getting back up again. And you both have been such an inspiration to me. I thank you so much for being guests today.
Thank you, Colette, for the opportunity to speak our faith.
Thank you, Colette, for always being a vessel to echo the mission of Christ through our witnesses, Catholics.
Oh, you both are wonderful. My thanks to our guests, Dr. Valerie Lewis Mosley and Andre E. St. Felice. I'm Colette Liddy. Thanks to our student, Paul Ivarot, for his production assistance. Please join us next time for Caldwell University Conversations.